The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 79 for November 20th, 2006. You are listening to the smooth sounds of the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. Anyway, I'm Dave Hamilton. Hi, John. How are you?
Thank you for that pleasant introduction, Dave.
Yeah, well, we got to change it up a little bit. It's a short week. It's Turkey Week here in stateside, as it were.
Yes, we celebrate. We give thanks by slaughtering a formerly live creature.
And eating it.
You can have a tofurkey too.
You can. I thought it was.
So here's some of the trends. One trend is the deep frying. You hear about this?
Oh, let me tell you, the best deep fried turkey I ever had was in the parking lot at the Meadowlands before a Jets game. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law is a serious tailgater, and we've deep fried a turkey with one of those propane things out in the parking lot. Best turkey I ever had. Anyway.
Wow. Yeah. But just be careful because some people try to put a frozen turkey into a vat of boiling oil.
Not a good idea.
I'm serious. You read about it every year. It's a bad idea. Bad things will happen. But
Mac and turkey advice from the Mac Geeks, from the Mac Observer.
What are we doing?
We've got all kinds of feedback to go through, and I did an interesting little experiment today I have two old iPods and a 3G and a 4G. I know, not that old, but, here in the land of toys, that those are old. So, and they both had dead batteries. We're going on this cruise in a couple of weeks with the family vacation here, and I thought it would be a nice little treat to have these iPods working for the kids to use on the cruise.
Dead?
What's
so,
that?
So I'm curious how you gauge the deadness. Like, if you tried to charge, it wouldn't?
No, it wouldn't hold the charge for more than, at most 20 minutes. One of them wouldn't hold it for a minute. Right. The other one was, close to a half hour, so it was, not usable. So I ordered, my buddy is over there at Tech Restore, Shannon, and so I ordered two batteries. That was weird. This just cut out. I ordered two batteries from him, and why is this cutting out? I hate the Dot Mac sync thing. I've ranted about this before. It's syncing or something and just eating all my processor. But anyway, yeah. So
batteries, same battery for both? Or
no,
different batteries?
Well, it... No. One was a 750, and one was an 1100. I think it was a 750 or 850 milliamp hour for the 3G and an 1100 for the 4G. And from what I understand, I think that's faster. Faster. See, I'm still obsessed with this stupid thing. But it stopped, thankfully. They're both higher capacity than what originally came with it. And certainly higher capacity than what I was, walking away from. So I was really concerned about how to get inside these things. And they both came with a little piece of paper that kind of tells you how to open it. I did a little bit of web searching. Actually, I didn't. Corey Cooper over at the Mac OSG podcast pointed me to a couple of videos that OWC, Other World Computing, MacSales.com has online. And, man, these videos made it so easy to do this because they totally walked you through the entire process of first, separating the case from the back from the front of the case, and then wedging this little tool that came with it in there and prying the thing open, and then pulling the hard drive out, and then pulling the battery out and putting it all back together. These videos are totally, totally worth it. So, if you're going to do this, check it out beforehand, and you can gauge whether this is, an operation for you or not.
Because my observation is when you look at the device, it's so beautiful and well-formed.
Yep.
They didn't really want you to get the side of it.
They sure didn't.
They wanted it to look like a big block of iPod.
That's right. Yeah, and that's right. It is. It's just a big block of iPod. That's right. But the guy that does these videos... Two things. A, he's a stud. He's done this, probably 100 times. So he totally knows what he's doing. And B, I'm pretty sure that these iPods that he opened for the videos had been opened before. And they do loosen up a little bit. It, that said, now that mine are back together, they're, you couldn't tell that they were opened.
Okay, do you have to be careful in like prying, or are there screws involved? Or?
On the 4G, there, I did remove some screws inside just to loosen up the logic board so I could pull the cable, the battery cable out from underneath it. Presumably you could do it without it, but they recommend pulling it out. It really wasn't that big of a deal. But you do need a T6 Torx screwdriver to pull that out. Thankfully I had one.
So. Uh-huh. So is it like pry? Is it you know, pressing down on a secret spot or flexing something?
And you take the iPod and you put it screen side down and to the right. So you know, if the screen is basically facing your right palm, and you start to pry on the kind of what would then be the front and then the back top and pull them away from each other, and it'll separate. The video shows it perfectly, and then as soon as you do that, you wedge this little tool in there. And the first thing you do is bring the tool around the front corner and then start to slide it down. And once you hit the front corner, then it'll kind of pop open. And from there, it's pretty easy. You don't want to rush anything. You've got to go fairly slowly around the bottom, especially if you've got the dock connector there and, you know, to separate that out. And then come around the top. There is a small little ribbon cable that connects the what will then be the top and the bottom of the iPod. Obviously, you want to open it very carefully so that you don't rip this ribbon cable. And again, that's where seeing these videos makes all the difference in the world, because you know what you're supposed to do and you know what you're going to see once you open it up. It totally increased my confidence level. The worst part was on the 4G, which is also true, of course, of the iPod Photo. The battery is actually glued in, and you've got to apply a truckload of pressure to pop the battery out. The whole bottom of the thing is like on this glue seal, but again, knowing that it, you know, you had to apply this pressure, it was like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, get after it. And I did. And it, each one took less than 5 minutes to do. And it was the first time I'd ever done it. So.
Okay. And then when everything got back together,
The
iPods acted like they just.
Yeah.
You just got it new, because I guess it forgot everything, right? But that's not that's a big deal.
It forgot, obviously, whatever was on
their hard drive.
Yeah.
No, I meant like the time and stuff.
It
like
forgot
that,
the time and the language and all that stuff. But it was as though I did a factory reset. But it started right up, and then I've got them charging. One of them had finished, and the other one was still going when I left my desk a couple hours ago. I should have checked it to make sure that, you know, the battery's all good and all that. But presumably it's just fine. So.
Now, do they recommend that you run it all the way down once, or does it not really matter?
I don't know. It's a lithium ion battery, which also begs the question of what do I do now with these dead batteries? Because I don't think they want me to throw those in the trash, but I've got to research that. I don't know if I'm supposed to run it down. I imagine that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, because I know that at least the Apple batteries are a lot of the PowerBook batteries they recommend. There's a, you know, a little chip that needs to be calibrated in there that tells the machine. And actually, I saw this with a friend's Mac. It was weird, as it got up to 99% if you do a you know, show percentage full on the battery.
Yep.
And he had just gotten the machine, so I think it was still calibrating, because it hung out there for a real long time, like 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it clicked over. I thought, you know, when it gets up
that high, it actually has to slow down the charging, and it goes into a trickle charge mode.
Right.
So that could make sense. But yeah, I believe in the PowerBooks and the MacBooks, it's actually circuitry inside the battery that needs to be calibrated. It's not the MacBook itself. It's the battery itself. But yeah, I mean, same difference. And I believe from what little I read, I believe the iPod's the same way. So yeah, it probably won't hurt to run them all the way down before we hit the high seas, as it were.
Okay, so anybody needs an iPad battery replaced, Dave's
just send
Dave's
it to me
for the challenge. No. Just send it. No, don't send your iPods to Dave, because then you can't listen to us. Well, you probably still could.
Hey, you know, that's an excellent point that I did that talk last week at the Seacoast mug with Corey about podcasting, and it was one of the big points that we made there, and it's a good point for me to make here, and and you all to make to everyone you know. You do not need an iPod to listen to podcasts. Everyone, you'll be surprised, but there are a ton of people that believe that. And I'll actually, you know, occasionally some of you will write and say, yeah, you know, I just started listening to your show and I think it's great. And now I'm going to hit all these back episodes. And I'm always curious because I want to know, well, how did you find it? And, you know, what avenues are working for us to attract new listeners and what aren't? And the other question I ask is, you know, why did you start now? What made you start listening to podcasts? And more often than not, it's, oh, well, I just got an iPod, so I thought that'd be a cool thing to do. It's like, oh, It sucks. So we need to find a way to tell the world. And no, Leo Laporte's whole let's change the name to Netcast thing, nice idea, not going to happen. So,
because you don't need a net either.
No, you don't. Well, I think he means the other net. You know what I mean? No. Okay.
Right. Go.
Go. So that's it. So that's my story. I'm sticking with it. And hopefully both the batteries will work and I won't have to take them apart again. Because it's not fun, that first bit of opening it in the instruction manual, the paper instruction manual that came with it from Tech Restore, which is also iPod Restore, for those of you that don't know. It says, you know, this is not easy. Expect to fail multiple times before you succeed. Like, oh, okay. But again,
that's to get your confidence.
Well, it's good advice, right? I mean, if they make it sound like it's the easiest thing in the world and you're having trouble, you're going to assume you're doing it wrong, right? But by them saying in the instructions, expect to fail, it's like, oh, okay, got it, you know. And really the trick is, and I got the trick not from anything anyone said, either the book or the guy in the video, but watching him do it on both of them. He puts it in kind of the middle because that's where you can separate it out, and then immediately goes to that top corner away from the dock connector and separates that out first. And mm-hmm. then you're not fighting the thing anymore. Then it wants to be open. You just kind of have to help it along. So there you go. That's it. We're out of here. Good night. Oh, no. We got more, don't we?
Oh, at night. Did you see the meteors the other...
You know, I didn't. I was actually gigging. I had a gig with a new soul horn band called Ghetto Fabulous. It was the first gig with them. It's fantastic. Come see us in Manchester on Saturday night if you're around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you won't be around, but maybe some listener will. And if you do, you know, come see me. I'm the guy banging on things in the back.
Leonid shower. Anyways.
Yeah. Was it cool? Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw at least one.
Really?
Like right outside my front door.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
All right. You got questions, we got answers.
Yeah, and actually some of you have advice, so we'll go to Jim.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Jim. I wanted to call about the comment on the guy who reformats his hard drive and reinstalls everything every 6 months or so. I wouldn't expect to ever have to do that, but what I do, because I have several Macs that I maintain in the lab and the school that I work at, is I create a master image. With a master image, I go ahead and use Carbon Copy Cloner and create an Apple Restore image. What I would do is boot from a CD. And on an external drive, I have my Restore image or my Apple Restore image on that drive. And basically what I do is I restore the image or restore the hard drive, the computer, from that image. It does an excellent job, all the files, everything. It just makes an identical carbon copy. You can do that copy onto any of the machines that you choose to do so. I have found that works better sometimes than using NetBoot. If you have an Apple server, I've had some success with NetBoot, but this one seems to be a little bit easier. So on an external drive, I have several different images, one for 10.4, one for 10.3, and it works fantastic. Thank you very much. If you'd like to email me.
Thank you very much, Jim. Yeah, you know what? I never had thought about that, John. Had you ever even considered doing that as a... kind of a stopgap? No.
No.
All right. Nick also wrote in with all the steps to do this, and he said, you know, install OS X and then install all your apps, right? And run them once in case you need to serialize, right? Get everything to the point where it's ready to go, and then make the image. And Nick actually went and said, look, make the images read-only because compress take too long, and no encryption, again, for the same reason, to save the processor, and there's no reason to encrypt any of this stuff. And then away you go. I like it. I think it's a great idea. I used to do it on the Windows side all the time when I was administering machines, but never, ever did it cross my mind that this would be a good idea to do on a Mac. And of course it is. So that's that. Joe had another interesting idea. Shall we? We shall, right?
Hey, John and Dave. Joe here from Raleigh. We're just listening to Podcast 78, where a listener was asking if he needed to reformat and reinstall all his apps, you know, on any kind of regular basis and stuff. And, you know, it wasn't clear, it seemed, that what the speed-up improvement was. You know, the idea of reformatting the drive speed things up, or will speed things up if it's associated with things that are just misplaced and not sequential or whatever on the drive. And it also, just because you're doing everything over again, cleans out all kinds of other stuff, right? Caches and things of that nature. One thing that I do occasionally, as opposed to doing that, is just do, you know, the normal archive and install function, which, you know, pretty much puts a clean system on that keeps you from having to reinstall everything. And that actually has shown some pretty significant improvements to me in the past. So that's something that, you know, might be another alternative. It really depends on what kind of speed improvement he was seeing, you know, if it was just, you know, file access, or if there were other things, you know, that were slowing things down. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, so if you couldn't hear that, Joe said he was doing an archive and install. Again, that's just from the OS X DVD there in the installer. And yeah, I've done that before. That is a nice kind of happy medium, but your mileage may vary. It leaves all the apps out there, so yeah, you know.
Yeah, I personally like Carbon Copy Cloner.
Do you?
Yeah, and Retrospect sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, I use Retrospect daily for backups, but that's a little different than you know what's going on here. So.
Yeah, and usually I'll drag my documents to an external drive or something every now and then. And or make a zip file of it, you know, archive.
Yep.
Archive file. Now, I seem to recall the OS X install that's archive.
Yes.
Sorry. I think that what that does is it'll archive. From what I recall, that's not a boot. I guess it makes a system folder buried somewhere, but it's not a bootable one. So it's really just for maintaining something in a prior state, but
that's right.
Think about what you're doing, you know, which may not be readily apparent, but you got to think about, you know, if what you're doing is going to result in something that you can, or I guess another thing I'm trying to say is make sure you have something around that lets you boot your machine in case things get to a point where you need to do a restore. Sometimes that gets tricky.
Well, yeah, I mean, the archive and install leaves your machine bootable, but like John said, it takes your existing system and library folders, moves them out of the way, and then creates new ones and creates an entire new bootable structure. What it leaves behind is everything else, your applications, your user accounts, all of that. So if you've got a lot of, you know, cruft and old preference files and all that stuff piled up in your user folder, that's not going to help any. But when you're doing an install, say, from, you know, 10.4 to 10.5, which hopefully we'll all be doing next year, the archive and install isn't a bad option at times like that. That's not a bad idea. So that's my thoughts. So last week, John, we did our second in a row geek challenge. And the point that was challenged was, how do I take a file or a folder and password protect it? Other people are going to use the machine. I don't want to create a separate user account. I just want to take, you know, a certain file or maybe a folder of files and protect them. And we got a lot of comments in And now I'm going to say something that I thought I would never actually say on this show, John, but I'm going to say it. Do you know what it is?
No.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Hey, guys. Byron from Teach Mac here. I have an answer for the Geek Challenge. Jackie wanted to encrypt a file or a folder. Well, the OS doesn't directly do that, but you can use the disk utility to create your own disk image that is encrypted. And in fact, we actually had a Teach Mac module called Apple Apps Volume 1 that covered this very topic amongst many others. Hope that helps. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Byron. Again, that was Byron from Teach Mac at teachmac.com. They are our sponsor for this show. They have an application that has all these different modules. Byron talked about one of them there that walk you through doing various things. There's actually a demo of me doing a keyboard shortcut thing with the dictionary in there. Once we get an icon for the Geek Gab, a little 16 by 16 icon, if somebody wants to design one and beat me to the punch, send it to me, MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. We'll get that right in there, and then we'll be right on the front list of Teach Mac. So, and of course, if you want to create modules of any of the things we talk about here, feel free to take our voice as we're discussing what it is we're doing and just do the screenshots over it. That would be fine too, and I think that'd be very cool. So you are welcome to use it for that. Use the audio from this show for that purpose if you like. That's TeachMac@TeachMac.com. There was one other, that solution works, right? The disk utility thing, but I was really going for something else. And we had a lot of you write in about the disk utility, and one of you even said, make sure you use a sparse image, right? Because what a sparse image does in disk utility is you set a size, let's say you say it's a 40 megabyte, right? Or whatever. The image won't actually be 40 megabytes. It'll only be as big as the contents of the image. It'll max out at that 40, or again, whatever you have set it to, but it won't just instantly take up 40 megs and have, you know, 39 and a half of them be empty, if you only got one small file out there. So a sparse image, that's certainly one way to do it. Very transportable. You can bounce it around from computer to computer. You could even keep it on a flash drive, right? And that's one way to do it. But I wanted something, you know, I really was looking for how do we make it like OS 9 had, where it was just a password as you went to open the file. You didn't have to mount a new image. And did you see what Larry wrote in about, John? This thing called...
Larry?
Larry wrote in about something called...
Oh, yeah, Crypt.
Crypt, yeah, Crypt 3.
Crypt 3.
Yeah, from Steve DeCourt at DeKorte.com. Of course, that'll be in the show notes.
Of course.
And that pretty much does what I heard Jackie describe last week in the question. So that yet another option out there. I haven't tried it, but Crypt 3 sure sounds like what I envisioned. Are you getting the same thing from that, John?
No.
Oh, that's
yes.
Too bad.
Well, no, it seemed to be another utility that yep. You know, does it on a file level, which, you know, there was also that J file crypt thing, which
mm-hmm.
This may be a bit more polished. It does look more Mac-like, the other thing being Java. The other thing is it's something in keychain access that you can do, too.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever done this? I think we mentioned it in a
I've been in keychain access.
No. But there's something where you can say new secure note item.
Oh.
You can make secure notes within keychain access, oddly enough.
Huh.
Not as far as I can tell within the note pad.
Right, right.
Is that what it's called? It's called note, stickies, I'm sorry.
Stickies, yeah.
I'm switching into Windows mode. This is terrible. As far as I know, you can't create a secure sticky, but if you go into keychain access and say create a secure note.
Look at that.
The contents of the note will not reveal themselves unless you give a password.
Interesting. Huh.
So it's like an application. It's part of keychain access,
right,
which up
right.
until this point, a lot of people probably never really bothered to look at because you really don't need to. It's one of those
right.
little, you know, nice little OS 10 things that you don't really think about. Every now and then it'll pop up, but
yep. Huh.
So just thought I'd
that's pretty cool.
Interesting.
Along those lines, I use, as you may have heard me mention a number of times, I use Yojimbo to manage a lot of things, including all of the stuff that we use for the show. And Yojimbo allows you to secure individual items and force a password to open or access them in any way. So, and it seems very similar to this Secure Notes idea here in Keychain. So something else to check out. That's very cool. I you know, I'm in Keychain Access a lot, clearing things out and cleaning things up, and I never, never even noticed that it was there. So shame on me.
I don't know why it's there either. It just seems to be a weird place. I mean, it involves passwords, but
yeah.
Other than that, so gosh, what else we got?
You know, Byron called 206-666-GEEK, which is 4335, to leave his message, as did everyone else that you've heard on the show. If you have something to say, call us now. In fact, put it in your phone's speed dial, right? 206-666-4335. That way, no matter where you are, if something hits you, bam, you can call us. You don't even have to think about it.
And you could list it as geek. So all you have to say is geek.
Geek into your phone. Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's right. You know, last week I mentioned that at Macworld Expo, I think it's Tuesday afternoon at about 1:30, I'm doing a Windows on a Mac session. Talking all about how to use Windows on a Mac, what the options are, what how you might use it, and all of the caveats involved, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, I'm really looking forward to it. I finished my essentially the first draft of the presentation last week, and I'm really stoked about this. That said, you folks are probably a good smattering of the type of audience that I'm going to have at the show. So if you get a moment, give me a call, shoot me an email, tell me, do you use Windows on a Mac? If so, how do you use it? How, you know, what frequency, what apps do you use? Or if you don't, do you want to and why, right? What's got you thinking about this? So I'd be curious to hear, because I can still obviously tailor my presentation and would love to have all of the input from you folks as we roll into January.
I was thinking the why question immediately. Why would you want to do
that's
this?
Right. Yeah.
And there are reasons.
There are. And probably later in December, we may do a show on Windows on the Mac. I may take, you know, some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about at the expo and run through it here. Have John poke some holes in it for us and see what we can't do.
Maybe Santa will get me an Intel Mac. I still don't have one, you know.
I'm aware of this, John. You mention it quite frequently, you know.
Well, just thought I'd mention in case, you know, somebody's thinking of getting me a present.
I can't guarantee that Santa's going to bring you an Intel Mac, but Santa might bring you a ticket to the Cirque du Mac party, you know, which is also at Macworld Expo the night after I do my presentation. So, and of course, the Macworld All-Star Band will be playing. Then, oh, it's not Ghetto Fabulous. It's a whole different band. Paul Kent, Bob Levitis, Chris Breen, me, Brian Chaffin. It's a lot of fun. So if you're interested in coming, I can't promise you. I think we're going to be able to get John in this year. But if there's any of you, that want to go, let me know. We'll put you on the list and see what we can do.
Yeah, it sounded like everybody was having a real good time the last part.
when you were outside peering through the window as the bouncer was escorting you away.
I tried to convince him I was on the staff, but he wouldn't believe me. I did forget my ticket, but they did let me in. So
hey, don't tell anybody. Must have a ticket. That's the rule.
Well, I had a card. That
uh-huh. Sure you did.
I did. Uh-huh. Okay, here, you know, a picture of Mr. Jackson.
That always helps, yeah.
Not George so much, or
Abe, yeah.
Or Ben.
Yeah. Ben will work, yeah.
All right.
Lee had we'll move on to some new questions. Lee has something that. Well, here's what he has.
Hello, John and Dave. Whoa. This is Lee Andrew from the UK.
Hi, Lee.
I have bought myself a 300 GB external hard drive, connected via USB 2 to my iMac G5. Now, I've also recently bought myself a MacBook. And with that, I would like to access some files on that external hard drive. But I do not want to disconnect the external hard drive from my iMac G5. The problem is, I have absolutely found no way to connect to that external hard drive via the network or any other way. So any help on this would be greatly appreciated. Keep up the great work. Thanks very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
You want to take this one, John?
I'm going to guess... Both you and I think, listened to this and were like, that's weird, because that should just kind of work.
Yeah. And it probably will.
The only thing The only thing I'm thinking that could be the problem, so let me go back to what you should be doing. What you should be doing is plugging it into the iMac, I believe it was.
Yep, that's right.
Sharing. And so my favorite
Let's not skip over that. Let's go to the system preferences, right?
System preferences.
And go to the
sharing
pane
section.
Yep. And then
that then brings up three subpanes, services, yep. And services. The one that I like is personal file sharing.
That's right.
When you click on the little checkbox. Now, you can also do Windows sharing, but
no need. Not for this. That's right.
Yeah, there's FTP and a few others, but let's go with personal file sharing. And then on the other machine on my network, you click on the... this is where I think the problem may be. If you click on network...
In the Finder, you mean?
In the Finder,
yep.
On the machine that he would like to access the hard drive hooked
yep.
up to the other machine.
Yep.
And here, because I even tried this evening, I'm like, you know, is there something that, you know, that's all of a sudden not working?
Yeah.
And the only problem is if you click on network, you may not see anything for a while.
That's right.
And it's very, to me, and that's one thing that I find bothersome sometimes, it's kind of unpredictable when a network volume will pop up in network.
Yes.
And I don't know how you fix that, but I don't get a sense. And that actually happened to me. Initially, there was nothing there, and I'm like, oh, great. You know, is Apple Talk off? You may want to, you know, check that.
Shouldn't need it, though.
Router? You shouldn't, but, you know, can't hurt.
That's true.
You know, is the router blocking it, though? It shouldn't be blocking whatever IP port is being... Though I think that was a problem years ago. You would have devices that would block Apple Talk when that was the big protocol.
Yeah.
So that's about all I have. It's just, you know, you may have to twiddle your thumbs a bit.
Well,
you can
if you don't see it there, if you go back to the sharing pane on the iMac, it'll tell you at the top of that sharing pane, it'll say other computers on your local subnet can access your computer at and give you a name, right? So then you go back to the Finder on your MacBook Pro. You go up to the Go menu at the top of the screen, and all the way at the bottom of that menu is Connect to Server. Type in the name there, exactly as you see it, and then click Connect. That should bring up a window that asks you for a username and a password. As long as the username and password that you type in at this point is an administrator of the computer, you'll get a list of not only the home folder of that particular user, but all of the volumes connected to that computer. If it's not an admin, you won't see all of the volumes. So once you log in there, pick the volume you want to mount, and you're good to go. If you want to then drag it to your dock or something so that you've got a quick way of reaccessing it, that will work too. Right?
Yeah, and I tried this with a FireWire drive, not a USB drive, though it shouldn't make a difference.
Right.
The other thing is that box that comes up, the one that you were talking about, Go, and then...
It,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Go, Connect to Server.
Connect to Server.
Yeah.
In that field, I didn't know you could just put that name there, but a lot of times you can also put a prefix, like for Apple Share.
I
keep going on about that. You can do AFP:// for FTP. FTP :// and I think for Windows
SMB://
and then I don't know if you mentioned it, but you can also make it a favorite once you connect, so you don't have to do that again.
That's actually very handy. Yeah, and really,
so you could be on a slow network or
when you just type the name in, it I believe it defaults to using AFP even though you haven't typed it. So that's because that's what it thinks you're gonna do, I guess. Right?
Yeah. So
hopefully that's the problem. Yeah.
If not,
let us know. You send in nice sounding comments, Lee. So we're glad to have them. So here's another one from the voicemail number from 206-666-4335. Or if you follow the instructions, simply turn on your cell phone, hit the dial button, and say geek. That's right.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Jason Hipkins. I had a simple question with a Finder issue. I don't know if you guys could enlighten me on this. The size of the columns, a lot of times I have folders that are named longer, and I always, every time I open it, I have to stretch it out so I can see. Is there any way to defaultly set the width of a column in Finder? So that every time you open Finder up to search for files or move files, that they are the same, that they can be wider, defaultly, set a certain width. Thank you very much. You can reach me at...
When will leave that out for everyone's sake.
Wow.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this are, what from what I've found is, if you click, there's two ways to open a window in the Finder, right? One is, okay, but two of them do the same thing. One is by, if you're not in the Finder, or you're in the Finder and no windows are open. I guess no windows are, you have to have no windows open for this one to work. If you just click on the Finder icon in the dock, that's the same as going into the Finder and choosing new Finder window. Okay. If you take this window and put it wherever you want it on the screen, adjust its size, adjust the size of all of the columns, obviously set it to column view if you want, and then close that window, the next time you do either click on the Finder icon or file new Finder window, it will replicate exactly what you've done. But you've got to close it. You've got to open it, do whatever you're going to do, and close it. Don't spawn any new windows, just that one. Is that have you found that to be the case, John?
Yes.
Okay.
So, but it's annoying because.
Yep.
Like you said.
Yep.
So, I'm sorry. I was talking about views before. That you have three views.
Ah, yeah. There's three views. Yeah. So, but
I don't know which one he was talking about. I personally like, and I don't know if it's the default, but what about, I guess we call list view.
Okay, the middle one.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
At least that's the one I use most of the time.
Yeah. My guess is he's using column view based on what he said. And you can set the width of the columns here. And you can also do that in list view. The other way to open a Finder window is to double click on the hard drive in question. And that will do the same thing, but it's a separate preference. So the new Finder window is separate from the new hard drive window. If that suits your fancy. So.
Now, also in the column view, though, there is a little box, and it's meaning maybe kind of obscure, but at the bottom of the column.
That's right.
If you click on that, it kind of bops between the. I don't know why that's in there and not in the other view. It's very. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, resizing the columns in column view, as John said, is at the bottom of the column divider is the width adjuster. In list view, it's actually at the top where all of the title headings or the column headings are. That's where you, if you find the little spacer between them, that's where you adjust.
Yeah, I was just playing with that today. I don't know if I'm crazy about the column view, though.
Oh, I live with the column view.
Really?
It's a wonderful thing.
Sometimes icon view. Mostly I'll do icon view sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
List view.
I love the column view. Very, very, very easy to navigate. And of course, in column view, you can preview everything, right? If you click on a movie or something, you can play it right there. If you click on a picture, you can see the info for it.
Okay.
Yes. Aha. Uh-huh. 206-666-GEEK. Where are we doing on time here? You know what? I think we're just going to wrap this one up. We don't need to.
Some turkey to kill.
Crazy.
Turkey to eat.
We have turkey to eat. That's right.
Or you could have a tofurkey if you're into being nice to animals.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this gets far more political than the show I would ever need to. But as long as you're using the entire turkey, there's nothing wrong with.
Now I've heard of
eating a turkey.
Yeah. Now I've heard of. Is it a the turkey?
What?
Or a chidukki? It's a. I think you put a duck inside a chicken inside a turkey.
Yuck.
I remember what it was called. It was like a mix of all those.
That sounds terrible.
I've heard of it being done, and then you fry it.
Mm. Wow, there you go.
I think we're just going to have an oven prepared.
Hey, you know, if you're going to deep fry that turkey in one of them deep fryers, A, like John said, don't put it in frozen. That's just not an experiment you want to do at home.
Turducken, that's what it's called.
That sounds ridiculous.
A turkey, a duck, and a chicken. Turducken.
Now... it's actually a turkey, a duck, and a chicken all like crammed together.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Three birds in one.
Wow, three birds in one. But wait, there's less.
There's way more. All right.
If you're gonna fry it, make sure you keep the temperature consistent all the way through. I forget These guys were pros. I forget what they were doing, but I think it was somewhere.
I don't think you want to go much above 350.
I was just going to say, I think it's somewhere between 3 and 350, but the trick is keeping it consistent. And you cook it for as long as you're supposed to with the weight, but I think for us, we cooked it for a little more than a half hour. And then the best part was we ate the turkey, right? And then packed everything up, including the TV and the satellite dish and all of that stuff, right? And all the tents, packed it all up, went in and saw the Jets play. And then we came out, and of course, parking lot is a parking lot. You can't drive. So we unpacked everything and then watched the late football game on the satellite dish there out in the parking lot. And took the leftover turkey and made turkey soup, right? That was killer. Mm. Yeah, nice on a cold day. I'm not a huge football fan there, but I do enjoy watching the Patriots. I'll admit that. But that's just simply because I live in New England. It has nothing to do with my sports preference. It's just a thing. When you live in New England, it's like the Sox and the Patriots are this weird little thing. Everybody keeps it a secret, or some of the people do. But not me. My secret's out. What were we talking about? I think we were talking about nation states. That's right.
Nation states. Yeah, I'm getting a recycle on some of the issues.
Yeah, but the good thing is when you get up to 500 million in the population, you can create new issues or submit new issues anyway.
Sweet.
Yeah. I'm almost there. Boy. I was like at 480 or 479 earlier today. So
You can also customize the way you refer to your nation.
Mm-hmm.
I have all the canned ones, but when you go over 500 million, so we're...
I've got a great one. Certainly by the time we do the next show, I've been thinking about this for a long time, so you'll just have to tune in and see. And I won't say it on the show. You just have to play Nation States at nationstates.net.
And we're one of the biggest nations right now, I think.
Biggest region. Geeks Unite. Geeks Unite.
Mighty influence.
Is it mighty now? I thought it was very high. Wow. Mighty.
I think it's mighty.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great, actually.
What do we got here?
Cashfly Hosting is where you downloaded the show. Our podcast marketplace this month, 6 iIsolator earphones from Edemotic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, and of course, TeachMac from TeachMac.com. The Backbeat Media Podcast Network is where you go to sponsor us. And things are getting pretty full. We don't like to have too many sponsors in the show because then it, A, clouds the show, and B, doesn't allow us to highlight the sponsors. So we're fairly full, but I think there's room for one or two more in there.
Unless we hire that guy that talks really fast.
Really, really fast. Thank you very much. Yeah.
We can just cram him in. All right. Comments, please.
Mac Geek at MacObserver.com. That's right. Oh, the comments. Yeah. Yeah, go do the comments thing. That's right.
Not the comments. That happened already.
The comments. What are you talking about? Hello? So we'll be here next week, but the week after I'm taking off. I'm not here. I will be totally unreachable. It'll be the first time in 8 years that I will be detached from the grid. And though it scares the life out of me, I'm actually looking forward to it. So
take off, eh?
That's what I'm doing. And with that,
you're not even going to bring the crackberry? Promise?
I'll have it, but I'm going to turn it off. Yeah. Well, I'll need it while I travel. Yeah, I mean, on the airplane and stuff. I don't want to be on an airplane without it. So.
Do you really need it?
Yeah, if something happens, yeah, absolutely. With the kids, no question.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but then it turns off on the boat, so. But we'll see you next week. I'm not going yet. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. Tell your friends. Don't get caught.
Made up.